now, though, for our main discussion this morning, and it's on a subject that for many both enthralls and frightens, perhaps in equal measure, the onset of artificial intelligence in our everyday lives. Just a few short years ago, it seemed to be the stuff of science fiction novels. Now it's almost universally upon us all, at least in some manner. From driverless cars to the selection of the best candidate in recruitment to deciding whether or not you're entitled to a state benefit. These are just some of the possible uses we've heard in recent times. It's often said you can't stop progress, but is there a price to pay? When humans are replaced with machines, where's the moral compass? Or is it the unpalatable truth that we can trust a computer more than we can trust ourselves? Fiona Brown is Head of Artificial Intelligence at Datactics. Nell Wilson is a Machine Intelligence Engineer at the Singularity University in London. Tom Gray is Chief Technology Officer and Director of Innovation at Kainos. And joining me on the line from America is Michelle Navarez from the Goldman EI. Let's begin with you, Fiona. What is AI?
A very broad overview of AI. It's essentially the capability of a computer to perform cognitive tasks that we would usually attribute to a human. So things like speech recognition, visual perception, being able to make decisions and so on. So we hear a lot about AI, and then a subset of AI is machine learning. So that's things like you may have heard of neural networks, Bayesian models and so on.
No, could you maybe just tell us in kind of layman's terms what those are?
So these are algorithms or statistical models. And what we do with these is that we feed these algorithms lots of data, and they then start to detect patterns on that data, and then they can then use this learning to make predictions on new data. And we've seen this type of technology used in our everyday life from things like our personal assistants, like our Siri and Alexa, right through to email filters.
And do you think, Nell, that AI is something exciting for us as humans, or is it something we need to worry about ethically?
I describe it as exhilarating, which is a mixture of excitement and terror. So I think that's often many people's emotions relating to AI. It's coming on so quickly. The possibilities are immense. It's going to change our personal and our professional lives in many ways.
Tell us a little bit about those ways.
In essence, we have machines which can make sense out of chaos and chaotic situations. They can find correlations that maybe we might experience in a burst of intuition, but we can't rationally describe. But machines can dig very deeply into those and find all kinds of hidden correlations that we weren't otherwise aware of. We can make sense of the world in new ways. We can begin to address very complex problems. And we can find ways to describe things in new ways that otherwise we couldn't easily put into mathematics or language, those ineffable things. That is a threshold for humanity. We're stepping into a new era. But there are, of course, going to be significant challenges in integrating all of this into our society and into our psychology as well in healthy ways.
And Tom, do you believe AI is a terminator? Or really, can it actually help us? And in what kind of practical ways will it help?
I certainly believe that AI can help us. I'm probably concerned that the question's even asked that way, in no disrespect, Nikki, because I think conversations around AI need to be had with more people than just, say, the experts in the room. You know, we need to be able to have conversations about AI with government, with civic organisations, with citizens. And I don't think at the minute there's any real understanding of what AI actually is in the outside world. And I do think that, I think, stifles some of the debate. And if you have a perception that's largely fed by the media, you will be thinking Terminator, you think HAL 9000. You tend to think of it in terms of apocalyptic negative actors. You don't necessarily think about the fact that, you know, AI is increasingly being used carefully in areas like healthcare to help make better decisions around things like tumour detection. It's also used by banks to help prevent fraud for the very reasons that Nell articulated, that an AI-based machine can actually find these patterns in humongous amounts of data much, much more efficiently than a human can.
Michelle, is there room for emotional intelligence in the artificial intelligence world?
I think not only is there room, there really should, it should not be optional. When you think about what's needed from an algorithm standpoint and needing to have some oversight or auditing of, for example, the societal biases, various layers that get sort of unintentionally programmed into AI, that is where I think the space for emotional intelligence arises, is in the act itself of conceiving of what gets programmed in these algorithms. And so I think it stems to sort of the ethical components that are shouldn't be optional, let's put it that way.
Nell, I saw you nodding your head as Tom was talking about the conversation needing to come outside of these media buzzwords that I used a moment ago. Who would you like to see in those conversations, and how can we get those happening?
I would like to invite everyone from all around the world to be able to participate in these kinds of conversations. What I fear a little bit is Silicon Valley, in essence, having a monopoly on what values or behaviors get loaded into AI. I think if we are to integrate machines safely into all of our societies around the globe, machines need to be able to meet us where we are. They need to understand our local behavioral norms, our local behavioral preferences for how we engage with machines, and so that machines can act in a pro-social way in whichever particular creed or flavor of values that people have around the world. That's how we can make this truly democratic. And I think that's how we can make this participatory. We can invite people to kind of load examples of good role models that they think machines should learn from. And that's something I'm working on a bit with ethicsnet.org, trying to begin to crowdsource examples like that from people all around the world.
Can you give us an example of what it is you're trying to get people to load up?
Sure. Examples, positive and negative, but with an emphasis on the positive. So, for example, you might be looking online and see a really cute video of some firefighters rescuing ducks out of a drain and think, that's a really nice thing. That's a very nice behavior. I want to tag that as something that I find preferable. And from that, we can begin to teach machines what preferable behavior looks like. So it's not about trying to teach machines right and wrong. It's more simple things like nice or not nice or preferable or dispreferable. We don't expect a 5-year-old child to know right from wrong, or a dog or a cat, but we can still teach them what we prefer or don't prefer. And that helps to integrate and socialize pets and young human beings into our society.
That sense of preferences, Fiona, surely when we're born, there is a sense of right or wrong already innately in us as humans. So how can we control that if we're suddenly going from preferences to right and wrong?
So at the moment, we need to feed in lots of examples to a machine learning algorithm to learn from. And this is really important that we are feeding good quality, non-discriminatory, non-biased data into these models, because they are making predictions. And as Tom had said, they're making predictions in the medical domain. So one of my fears is to ensure that the data that we have is non-discriminatory and non-biased, because this is going to have an effect on individuals in society.
And how do you do that? How do you make it non-biased?
Mm-hmm. We're touching here on diversity. that whenever we are building these algorithms and these models, that we have a diverse workforce that are building these models. So whenever you have a diverse team, you've got diverse people, you've got diverse points of view, and hopefully then that will lead on to less bias then in the data sets. A very famous example is actually the Amazon example. You may have heard of this. So Amazon built a machine learning classifier to help them with their HR process. So they receive many, many CVs for jobs. So what they did is that they trained their classifier on 10 years worth of HR data. And the result is that it discriminated against females. So it was using the bias that was already there, building it into the classifiers, and this is the result. Now, they did pull the plug on this approach, but I think it highlights then, you know, the need to be conscious of what you're building and conscious of the data that's being fed into that.
I think that's a good point, Fiona, and I'm not, I guess, debating it, but in that Amazon example, we weren't saying that the AI algorithm was doing anything worse than what a human would do. Mm-hmm. It wasn't doing anything better. So it was just perpetuating the biases that already existed.
Exactly,
and
yes.
Absolutely, I mean, there's a significant opportunity there to improve things. Mm-hmm. But I think my fear is not the technology itself, because I do firmly believe that technology is neutral. It only, I guess, has value when it's used. And my fear is more about, you know, the tendency of humanity to misuse inventions or technologies. So AI can be applied in very beneficial ways. It can also be applied in very malign ways. It's not the technology's fault. It doesn't care what it's being asked to do, but it absolutely is the responsibility of humanity, whether it is the developers who are creating the technical solution, whether it's the companies who are selling and marketing and who are going to be driven by primarily financial constraints. But then there's also the responsibility of the government and the citizens. I don't believe that the government and the citizens have sufficient knowledge to be able to have, I guess, a sensible conversation that might allow the creation of appropriate policies and regulations to do our best to ensure that the output is beneficial.
That's where I think emotional intelligence comes in, because if you think about, I kind of liked what you said, Tom, it's neither better nor worse. It's only as good as sort of the information going in. And so when you look at where is it that we can actually impact the value chain here, it's at the level of people. And it's at the level of those programming. It's at the level of those programming at the direction of, as you said. And so when we look at where is the role of emotional intelligence, first, let's just define emotional intelligence. It's the ability to be aware of one's own emotions as well as other people's emotions. It's the ability to exercise what we call emotional balance. That is, how do you self-manage, for example, when you've been triggered or you have an amygdala hijack, as it were, and then how quickly can you recover, or your resilience, along with empathy and focus, the ability to selectively direct your attention. And so those are the core skills, I would argue, of emotional intelligence. And so those are capacity building in nature and agnostic, but something that is so essential to really everybody as humans in the process, to be able to have that dialogue, as you say, of the unintended consequences, being able to conceptualize things as humans that we're not so good at generally, which is cause and effect, and the interconnection of how if we pull one string here, it sets off 10 others down the stream. And so it's that kind of core capacity that needs to be built by humans, in humans, not just intellectually, but through experience and actually developing emotional intelligence.
Nell, I see you nodding there. Can we build ethical principles into AI using emotional intelligence?
We can create good rules for how machine intelligence should be applied. So we can create rules for organizations that are making it in order to better certify whether something is likely to be safer in terms of accountability, in terms of minimal bias and transparency for end users. I think that trying to create rules for how AI itself should function is quite tricky. The world is a very complex place, and what we're learning from AI is that sometimes it's easier to give examples rather than hard code rules itself. And that's why I think that learning from role models is so valuable. I mean, children learn a lot from Saturday morning cartoons, you know, the goodies and the baddies, these sorts of exaggerated archetypes of nice or not nice behavior. But I also wonder if there might be opportunities for machines to help us, ourselves, to relate with each other better. We live in an increasingly polarized world where people don't necessarily understand each other very well. But yet, we also have technologies today that can fairly reliably turn Mandarin into Swahili. So perhaps machines can also help us to translate between each other, to better understand each other, or to turn one phrase into something that somebody else is going to be able to receive better. Because one of the biggest problems in the world today is that people think they're speaking the same language, but often words mean different things to different people.
Michelle, how would you respond to what Nell has just shared?
I think that there is so much possibility for AI to help with what you've just described and even with developing emotional intelligence. In fact, in many of the programs that we're putting out in the world, we are using tech to change habits, build habits in the direction of developing emotional intelligence. That said, if we go in with the agreement in which we may or may not that tech is neutral, then the differentiator then are the people and what gets put into the tech. And I think there's a certain amount of that we also are obviously still learning about and that probably goes beyond what we can conceive of. So I think in that sense, emotional intelligence is critical for looking at the ripple effect and just bringing that level of consciousness to the things that would otherwise be unconscious and could sort of undo the helpfulness piece or certainly overshadow it. So I think it is a balance. And yes, I think that can be done.
If you're just joining us this morning on Sunday Sequence, we're talking about artificial intelligence and its role in our world. We're joined by Nichelle Navarez, CEO of Goldman AI, Fiona Brown, Head of AI at DA Tactics, and Nell Watson, Machine Intelligence Engineer at the Singularity University in London, and Tom Gray, the Chief Technology Officer and Director of Innovation at Kainos. Tom, we as humans are emotional creatures. We're not just rational. And going back to what you were talking about earlier about technology being neutral, how can it possibly be neutral if it's created by people who all have inbuilt bias?
That's a very good question. There are probably nuances to the answer and nuances to technology. I mean, but I do still believe, I guess, that fundamentally technology is neutral until it's used. Now, you can obviously create a piece of technology, say a gun, whose primary purpose is probably to do harm in some shape or form. Now, you can use that in the service of keeping the peace, but it is fundamentally, I guess, a destructive artifact. But of course, the NRA would say, well, guns don't kill people, people kill people. I think the same thing applies to the likes of AI. It is simply a machine that is interpreting a bunch of instructions. The shift that we've seen recently is that it's no longer the case that a computer only does what you program it to do. Now, with machine learning, it can learn based on what you've enabled it to learn and the data that you've given it. But, you know, I don't think it's reasonable to expect the machine to say, or to have the emotional intelligence to spot, well, I'm being given biased data, stop, give me unbiased data. Yeah, I don't think that's reasonable. I think it's up to the human, be it the developer, be it the analyst, be it the implementer, to ensure that, you know, the appropriate choices are made around training data, the appropriate choices are made in terms of application. I think that's kind of what I mean in terms of the technology being neutral. And I think actually building emotional intelligence into something like AI as it exists today is a humongous task, and it's probably well beyond where we are with the technology today?
I wanted to respond to that because I think it is incredibly complex. I think you are right. Emotions are complex, and we're still learning, by the way, very much sort of about how emotions work in our own brains, let alone, you know, how we would program, you know, a machine to have the capacity, as you suggested, or was implied, to be able to make sense of the complexity that is emotion, and at the heart really of being able to discern even examples of, you know, right and wrong, which again, there's subjectivity in. That said, we have to try. To not try would be, I think, ill-advised. And I think we have to start where we are. And in the same way that technology is growing in leaps and bounds, I think well ahead of our capacity to conceive of the consequences or unintended consequences of what we're building. Similarly, we have to take a stab at the emotional intelligence piece as well. And I think personally, it starts with developing that in humans and the people who are responsible for the programming and making decisions strategically about the technology that's being created.
And just to follow up on that, Michelle, people are trying to put frameworks around this and to try to articulate what are ethics, what's an ethical framework, and so on. So we do see institutions like the Alan Turing Institution, the OECD, trying to come up with principles on what makes AI and how it's democratic and so on. We do have certain institutions in that trying to address these quite prickly hard questions. You know, is there then a vacuum between countries in terms of AI, what the ethics are around it, and what the safety then is around that again?
And Nell, I'd like to come to you and ask, could AI eventually become sentient and make its own choices, which are beyond our control?
It's a fair question. I think that's one that people are often concerned by. There is a bit of a difference between sentience and sapience, for one. In Star Trek, they talk about searching the galaxy for sentient life forms, but actually, your cat and your dog are sentient in the sense that they feel emotions, they have pleasure and pain, etc. Sapient is rather when something is intelligent enough to be self-aware, right? To recognize that it exists and to have like existential concerns and things like that. So I think that something sentient, something that can feel, which is born of machine. On some level, I think that might be feasible. I think we could simulate pain and pleasure, although I don't know how ethical that might be, in fact. And it's possible to wire some aspects of biology into machines as well. There are some fantastic experiments being done with slime molds, these very, very clever single-celled organisms that somehow have the intelligence to seek out like food that they prefer and things, and we still don't understand how exactly that's possible. Sapience, I think, might be a lot further away. I think we might be decades away from a machine that can be truly self-aware or to express true agency in a human-like sense.
Tom, do you think there's room for faith in AI and also faith in God, or does God become irrelevant because of AI?
I don't think God becomes irrelevant because of AI. I guess it depends on your belief systems, etc. But again, it comes back to my point, you know, AI is a machine, a thing. The impact of God and faith is on all the actors around the AI, be it the creators, be it the consumers, etc. And depending on your faith, depending on your values, I think we have to recognise that there's no one globally accepted value system. And some of the comments that Fiona made about OECD and ethics frameworks, all worthwhile activities, but there could be an argument that those conversations are being had by, let's say, very well-informed individuals of relatively generous means, and there is a whole demographic of the population, you know, the majority of the population, that is not part of that conversation. I think it's not the technology that's going to be influencing. I don't think we're going to create an AI that in 50 years, 100 years, you know, it worships any particular faith. Now, if you watch science fiction, you know, you may well find that an apocalyptic scenario, that AI becomes the god of that particular culture. I tend not to be a dystopian. I tend to be a utopian and an optimist at the end of the day. But I think it's in our own hands. You know, I mean, there's a good book, I've forgotten the name of it now. The way it's sort of phrased, you know, what's happening with AI, you know, it's not like the weather where you're watching it and you're hoping for the best. You know, this is something that we have almost complete control over. And it's up to us as a species, as individuals, to actually control the direction that the creation of AI, the creation of machine learning takes.
Fiona, could AI be the next form of evolution for humanity?
Oh, wow. That's a question, Nikki. I suppose where I'm looking at AI at the minute, we're still at the narrow stage of AI. So it works really, really well whenever you laser point it at a particular problem.
Give us an example.
So, for example, say you're Alexa and you're saying, what's the weather like outside today? So that's natural language processing going on at the back, and it works really, really well there. Now, if you were to take your Alexa and you were to say, right, Alexa, diagnose that slide for me there to see, you know, is there anything wrong with this patient? Just wouldn't be able to do that. So at the minute, we're still within this narrow application of AI. And then there's talk about artificial general intelligence, I suppose. So that's more where you could pop this algorithm and it would be able to adapt to whatever situation that you put it to. That's probably not going to happen in the next couple of decades. And actually, it's a very hard one to predict when that will actually happen.
Michelle, I heard you trying to come in there.
When we look at sort of this question of what are the ethical frameworks that we can draw from, and, you know, looking, for example, at OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, they have, in cooperation with the DQ Institute, for example, and the World Economic Forum, with whom Goldman AI is a key partner, developed a competency model that is meant to be a framework of reference. And so I think groundbreaking work in that area is critical. Even though it is complex, we start where we are. And I just wanted to sort of point out that while it's a relatively new initiative, beginning, I think, in 2018, I think it's a very important one. And we do need, I think, governance at some level and frameworks that are happening on a secular, as evidence-based level as possible, again, in the interest of being conscious as possible about the bias and what we put in to these systems and how we conceive of them. So I just wanted to mention, I think that that's going to be critical, that we be thinking of those frameworks and actively talking about them, because it's going to happen either way. Things will continue to evolve. And so we have an opportunity, if you really talk about agency here, at a fundamental level, there's a level of agency we need to act upon within artificial intelligence. But if you look at what our agency is as human beings, it really does come down to, on a moment-to-moment basis, our self-awareness and our focus and our emotional balance. That is what at any given moment allows us as humans to have choice. So that has to be built in somehow to all of us.
And Nell, we'll come to you for one final thought. Is it the unpalatable truth that we can trust a computer more than humanity?
Well, they do say that there is sometimes the ability to harness the wisdom of the crowd. Perhaps if machines get to know each of us on an intimate level, they may be able to begin to aggregate a lot of our thoughts and feelings about the world and to connect us and to connect our great global psyche of 8 billion souls and counting. And perhaps, who knows, maybe something truly grand might come of that.
Thank you. Michelle Navarez, Fiona Brown, Nell Watson and Tom Gray, thank you for joining us on Sunday Sequence.